Today's sponsor is Casper Mattresses, obsessively engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. Now you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/cracked and using code cracked. That's CASPER.com/cracked, and you get $50 towards any mattress purchase. Today's episode is brought to you by Lynda.com. If you want to be a better photographer, they've got classes on how to do that. If you want to make your website better, you can learn how at Lynda.com. Whether it's learning how to code or how to do graphic design, no matter what you're looking to do, they've probably got a course on it. So go to lynda.com/cracked today. That's lynda.com/cracked for a 10-day free trial. Hello everyone, I'm Daniel O'Brien, the creative director of video for Crack.com, filling in again for your usual host, Jack... something or other. The song you're hearing is Wait a While by The Hold Steady off their album Teeth Dreams, and it has nothing to do with the subject of today's podcast. I just like it, and I think you will too, and it's not rap, much to Jack's chagrin. Speaking of whom, Jack would be here hosting himself, but as some of you know, he is busy right now on a globe-spanning quest that has him following a series of clues hidden in plain sight in the works of Rembrandt. It is believed that at the end of this journey, which, again, has technically earned Jack a spot on the FBI's most wanted list, as well as landed him the persistent, albeit apt, nickname of Tall Jack the Art Tickler, will result in the uncovering of a truth that Jack believes goes all the way to the, quote, top, end quote. We wish him the best. Speaking of the absolute truth, today I wanted to speak about absolute truth. If you follow entertainment news, you know that actor Steve Ranazzisi of The League has landed himself in a bit of trouble recently. For many years, Steve talked about working for Merrill Lynch on the 54th floor of the South Tower, that's the World Trade Center. He's often told the story about how he and his wife had to boldly escape the building during the attacks of September 11th, and how it was this tragic event that served as the wake-up call that sent Ranazzisi to Los Angeles to start over and pursue a career in comedy. "I was there, and then the first tower got hit," he told a reporter in 2009, and claimed he still has dreams of running from the second tower as it collapsed. Well, it turns out that that was total bullshit. He, in fact, never fled the tower. He didn't have to, because he didn't work in that building or for Merrill Lynch, and instead worked in Midtown. In a statement last Tuesday, Ranazzisi apologized, saying, "I don't know why I said this. This was inexcusable. I am truly, truly sorry." And, yeah, man, that is inexcusable. Lying about being in one of the towers on 9/11 is sort of like lying about being in one of the towers on 9/11. This is an obviously insane story that is still being dug into, so we didn't really cover it on today's podcast, but it was the spark that got me thinking about fact versus fiction, our need to embellish our own life stories to make them seem like more compelling narratives, and movies that are based on true stories that are actually, like Steve's brave story, bullshit. We as audience members have a really strange relationship with truth and fiction right now, and I think might tie into why a man like Steve Ranazzisi might be compelled to give himself a totally fictitious origin story, and why an author like James Frey would lie to the entire world, and even worse than that, to Oprah. I sat down with Liana Mabey, author of South on Highland, a new novel, but is it based on her life, and if so, how much? And Josh Sargent, Cracked columnist and editor, and author of Zero Books and Counting, to discuss truth, justice, and Chris Hemsworth. We're going to hear what happens. I'll check in with you again at the end with food notes. What's in you? You've got a broken heart. They're going to come around and try to make you smile. Little girl, you're going to rush right in. Why don't you wait a while? What's in you? They've got an open shot. They're going to come around and try to make you smile. Why don't you wait a while? Why don't you wait a while? All right, we're here. I am Crack's creative director of video, or whatever we generally say my title is, and I'm joined by Cracked columnist and his job, Josh Sargent.
Hi, Daniel. How are you?
What is your job title? Do we have that?
It's just editor. I wrote Time Bandit on the thing that goes above my cubicle.
There's no way that that's legit.
No one's fixed it. I've been here for a year and a half, and no one's scribbled it out angrily. I haven't gotten any emails.
Well, I'm sure if you were given business cards, they would not say Time Bandit.
I have business cards.
Do you?
Yeah.
Time Bandit is the least corporate job title you could possibly have, so I commend you.
Thank you. Yeah, I was pretty happy with it. I just watched the movie.
The voice of that anarchist who commends anti-corporate lifestyle is Liana Mabey, one-time contributor to Crack.com and author and other adjectives.
That's actually on my resume.
Yeah.
One-time contributor to Crack.com. No. Actually, maybe somewhere.
Yeah. But yeah, Liana, we're going to talk about truth in fiction and like our weird love-hate relationship with whether or not a story is true. And we bring in Liana because she has recently published a novel. We're officially calling it a novel.
Yes.
You want to talk about it?
It is called South on Highland, and it's simultaneously a novel, a satirical novel about growing up in LA and kind of my take on the like addiction and recovery memoir. That whole long genre, you know, with like Permanent Midnight, going all the way up to the whole James Frey scandal, which was a big influence, that I wanted to basically fictionalize the drug memoir.
If you haven't read it, you should check it out, South on Highland. I love it very much.
Thank you.
It's very funny. It's very good. And I got really curious about it because it says right on there that it's a novel by Liana Maybe about a character named Layla Massey. Am I pronouncing?
Massey.
Massey. Is that how
sure.
it is in your...
In my brain.
Phonetically?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's about a young woman who grows up in California, which I know that you did, mm-hmm. and who writes, which I know that you do. And there's so many interviews that won't accept it as novel or satire. They seem like they're almost aggressively grilling you, like, yeah, but like, how much of it is real or fake? They really want to, like, some percentage number for point to the chapters that
yes.
actually happened to you. Which of these conversations really happened? It seems like a really strange obsession to me because read the book. Did you like the book? Okay, good. Move on. Like, how much is there to be gained from truth percentage?
I mean, it's interesting because that was completely what I wanted to happen when I was writing the book. And now that it is actually happening, I'm super annoyed by it. but I mean, my mother would like everyone to know that it is a novel because there are a lot of drugs. But yeah, it's really strange. And I think that's sort of with all books, you know, that are in any way autobiographical. It's like you're trying to figure out like what part actually happened to the author. And I don't understand quite how that would... People, it changes people's perceptions and it changes my perception. And that was the whole fascination with the drug memoir, you know, this idea that you're getting a true story. When if you really take a step back, you're like, wait a second, like I'm reading this second by second account of this experience that happened 15 years ago, like on day 8 of a crystal meth binge. And it's written in a way that like we are supposed to take every single moment of it as actual event. And that's just ridiculous. And
yeah.
it's kind of like... Why does it have to be real? You know, if you are a fiction writer or a creative writer in any way, like, isn't it kind of more fun to come up with stuff, maybe?
And do you prefer, like, being coy about it at this point? Just being like, oh, I don't know, some of it's true, some of it's not. You'll have to read it several times and preferably in different versions mm-hmm. and, like,
just
get it as gifts.
I think
so.
I think, like, the Kindle versus the paperback, you know, I think you would have different perceptions
right.
reading it.
But
also
totally
the audiobook.
Different experience.
Oh, completely.
If you prefer to be coy, so you could step back and like make it not just a book, but sort of this experience where people like are having these conversations around the book. Or if it were me, the ego that I have, I would say, no, none of it is real. It is born out of my brain as I am a vessel of God. And give me credit for every idea that is in there.
And that's the battle I'm having, which is like, I want you guys to think that like I am this inventive and like this good a writer that I can like create these stupid experiences. But I also want to seem cool, like
yeah.
the character who does all this cool stuff. So there's this internal battle, which is if I'm remaining coy, I think it's just because I don't want to give either of those things up.
Sure.
So I want you to simultaneously think that I did all the cool things in the book and that I made all the cool things in the book up.
You should act like you're just noticing that her name sounds like yours.
Oh.
Like, whoa. That unintentional. Unintentional. Oh. You're the first person to bring that up, actually.
Well, I initially wrote it with my real name. Mm-hmm. And then my publisher was like, this is... too confusing. You will make everyone angry at you. And I was like, well, that's what I want. But
that's,
I had to change it.
A handy segue because we've got another employee of the site is David Wong. His real name is Jason Parjan, but he writes under the pseudonym David Wong. And he has a series of books starring a character named David Wong. And recently in an interview with Man Cave Daily, he's talking about getting into that character. And this is the first time I've actually heard him mention this. He's been writing this character for, I don't know, 10 years now, I guess. And he's just like, no, I have as easy time slipping into the David Wong character books as I do with, like, a character named Amy or this character named Zoe. David Wong is nothing like me, David Wong. I would probably really despise him if I met him in real life. He's almost surprised that you'd be confused by it. It's like,
mm-hmm.
oh, no, I don't like it. Why would you think that?
Right.
Why would you think that?
He describes the character as really drunken and cynical. And I remember when I first read John Dies at the End, before I'd ever met Jason or interacted with him in any way, it was like... wondering how much of this is autobiographical. Obviously not the monsters that mm-hmm. he battles, but there were like a lot of details and a lot of like...
Right, it's two funny, sarcastic friends growing up in the Midwest while adventures happen around them. And mm-hmm. knowing Jason like we know that he has a close relationship with Mac Leasty, who writes as John Cheese, the name of the other character in this book. I could tell in Sarge's eyes. Are you just realizing that that's how we pronounce Mac's last name?
No, I knew that. I knew that. It mentions it in at the end of the edition of John Dies at the End I read. And that's where I found it out. And when I found that out, I made this face. On an airplane.
Yeah.
It was a great face, everyone.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, everyone listening at home. Top five faces I've ever seen.
They would have loved it. They would have loved it.
Definitely.
Are you, Liana, back to your book? Because this is an extended commercial for your book.
Are we pronouncing your name correctly?
Yeah.
Oh,
thank
good.
You.
Yeah.
Okay. Daniel's like, I knew.
Liana said, yeah. And then I'm like, it checks out, Josh. She's
yeah,
right.
We're all.
Trust me. I've met her.
you
mentioned you. James Frey or James Fry. Do you know it better than I do?
You know what? I don't. Now, okay. We're really getting into name pronunciation on the show.
I think it's James Fry, actually. You mentioned
James
him.
James Cheese?
And he's, yeah, it's James Cheese.
It's pronounced Leesy.
He's one that I remember this scandal all unfolding for anyone who is so young that they don't remember this happening. Fuck you.
Wow, can you imagine that?
Yeah, I can. I'm doing it right now. So A Million Little Pieces was sold as an autobiography, this drug memoir by this man, James Fry. And it was just this really harrowing tale. And it was
Oprah shows up in the story.
Oprah brought it to the book club and was like, everyone needs to read this book. And because she is the closest thing to a deity we had at the time, everyone bought that book and read that book. I read it. I talked about it with my parents. It was like this huge, oh my God, read this thing. It's so
really? You
tough
talked about
to
it with
read.
Your parents. I like the idea that in this story, you were the ones that brought this to your parents as the very responsible son.
No, I
you gotta check out this harrowing tale.
Mom and Dad,
let's sit around the table and talk
issues.
About it.
My mom and I have been trading books since like I was in second grade. This is all.
Daniel was really good at reading.
First, you brought her Go Ask Alice at the age of 9.
Yeah. Like, Mom, I really think you're ready for
Mom.
For
I think,
some Joyce.
Hey, Mom, do you want to read Anna Karenina with me? Yeah, you dumped to Joyce.
Yeah.
I went Russian. It's fine. Same joke.
It's all right. But yeah, we were talking about it, and then there was this huge scandal where it turns out it was made up, and I think his excuse was that there was some pressure from the publisher that you should just, like,
right.
He wrote it as a novel because it was an addiction memoir, and he wrote it as a novel based loosely on his experiences with addiction, and the publisher was like, no, sell it as a memoir. It'll be much better if you do it as a memoir. And then we all found out that it was fake, and there wasn't even the smallest minority to say, well, I still enjoyed my time reading the
no,
book.
No, exactly.
Everyone
it was
turned
like
on him immediately. They were like, this is fake. What a waste of time. All the, like, no one could flip the switch and say, oh, well, then I didn't connect with James. I connected with this character that he created and went through this strange experience that could be real for someone. Because it's not like, hey, my name's James Fry and I'm a skydiving sex magician and this is a true story. No, it's a guy who has a very real drug and alcohol problem and seeks treatment for it, meets people, learns lessons, and overcomes his addiction. That could happen, and you could just still connect with the idea of this or the character.
Right.
But no, nobody wanted to hear another word from this guy, and he was just, we're always looking for someone to destroy, and he was like our sacrifice in whatever year this was.
2003? That's way too long ago. Ugh. Yeah, but I mean, it also brings up the whole idea of like emotional truth and like why that isn't considered as valid as like actual facts, you know? And it's like, to sit down for me writing this, like the most true thing was kind of the emotions of it, and like I was like, I feel like I can actually express these in like a real way, but no one cares. That doesn't seem like real truth, and that's interesting.
It's strange that they've allowed no middle ground too. It's like, oh, if you're gonna write a novel, write
exactly it has
write
to
Carrie
be complete-
write Cujo. But if you're going to write anything that's vaguely truthful, it's got to be, I want to check your sources on it and make sure that you did it.
Well, I'm just learning this looking at the Wikipedia page, but this didn't destroy him, did it? He got to have a writing career after this, didn't
but he? And
what
he,
are his other books called off the top of your head?
But he did this weird thing that
his
do you guys remember
novel
this?
Was a
where he like had basically this like writer factory?
Yeah, he created this new like publishing house or some, he did treat it as like, I'm changing the game now.
And he basically had writers come in and write for him and like pay them a salary, whatever it was, and then just took their books and published them under his own name.
That's
I'm
not
only
weird.
Like 80% sure I'm getting this right, but it's something like that.
I mean, James Patterson has an entire, he just goes down to his basement and there's cages of children and he pokes them with a stick and then they just give him James Patterson novels. He's got this.
You'd
is,
think they'd be better knowing that
right,
story.
Right. I mean, that part of it is not exactly true, but he does have like a school of people that ghostwrite so many novels. That's why James Patterson has the wall of James Patterson books about whatever the hell he writes about. Law? Is he a lawyer guy? I have no idea what James Patterson is.
Adventure archaeologists.
But he also, there's like James.
Adventure archaeologists?
Probably.
Could be.
I love that genre.
He also has like James Patterson young adult books and James Patterson vampire books, because he's got like the school of James Patterson where he just has all these people write his books, pays them something, and puts his name on it.
Hardy Boys works the same way. There's no Franklin W. Dixon. It's all freelancers. I think Goosebumps worked the same way.
Was that all? I refuse to research that, but that's all R.L. Stine.
But I think there was something particularly weird about this James Frey thing, where like he was, I think that he was having people just come up with ideas and then write them. Something especially egregious. We will vilify this guy forever. He has no hope.
Objectively, a strange follow-up to getting caught lying in your
exactly.
book.
Like,
Oprah.
Not the way to get back on top. Yeah. It's to exploit young writers.
I really want to know if I'm wrong about R.L. Stine. If he wrote all of them, then that's incredible, because I know that most series like that are written by a network of freelancers.
He was on the Jeff Rubin podcast, Jeff Rubin Show, a couple years ago, and I'm pretty sure it's all him. Not because
that's
he
nuts.
Said, it's all me, baby, but he has a very mechanical approach to writing, a very diligent approach to writing, where he's just like, no, you know, you just sit there and you think of it, and you write, and you sit down and you write a book, and then tomorrow you do it again, and you just keep writing books, and R.L. Stine... fuck you.
that's more reassuring, because he's one of the main reasons I started writing.
But
as a
what
kid,
about so. That R.L. Stine cool. book about the factory of young writers all writing R.L. Stine books?
Yeah, that's and it stars like a Robert Lawrence Stone, so like you don't know like
right.
how much truth
yeah.
there is to
oh,
it.
Oh, wait, no, this actually happened as a Hardy Boys book, in that one of the freelancers for the Hardy Boys felt like he was being abused and like the system was abusive, so he
so
wrote a Hardy Boys adventure about them oh. uncovering this like abusive work situation. Like he wrote like a
yeah.
like
a labor Hardy
malpractice
Boys
Hardy Boys adventure.
And that young author's name was nobody knows because
yep.
justice is dead because
yeah,
it didn't
yeah.
work.
The guy who didn't write the article that was in The Atlantic that I read
yeah.
about this.
So we can move on to, I think we've lost, let's say, 90% of the podcast audience by opening with lots and lots of books. But we can talk about movies, too, because I know Josh has a lot of opinions about movies. This is something that we've come across on the site a number of times, where movies based on true stories that are actually bullshit. Not that the true stories are bullshit, but like the way that the movies represent them are total bullshit. And it's really... it goes in both directions. Very often they will make a movie more interesting than the source material because, hey, it's a movie and I don't see a part for Scarlett Johansson in this, so you've got to change Edward Jimmy Olmos to ScarJo.
Mm-hmm.
This is the amount of nicknames that I'm throwing out.
That was quite a nickname. Edward Jamie.
Yeah. So they'll change it like to make it sexier and make it more Hollywood. But they also, we found many times that they've buried a much better story in favor of a shittier movie for reasons that are not clear to anyone.
Yeah, I did an article about scenes that they cut for seeming too unrealistic from true stories. There's a scene in The Wire where a character jumps off a third floor apartment.
Omar survives
and runs off. In real life, the guy he's based on did that, but it was out of the fifth floor. And when they were shooting it, they were like, no one's going to buy that. And when they made the Public Enemies movie about Dillinger, there's a famous escape where he makes a wooden gun and he tricks three guards into hiding in his cell or whatever in the movie. In real life, he did it to 17 guards.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's just every single guard in like the entire building fell for the same gag, but
that's also two acts worth of plot.
Yeah, they may have cut that just because like we don't need. They shot it, and it's just like this is 45 minutes of just Johnny Depp just tricking people. Like, it's not funny.
Just the audience really tense. He's not gonna trick 15 guys. He's not gonna trick 16. He's not gonna
surely 17 must be too many.
Sarge, there's a new movie coming out about the sea, and Sarge. Not a lot of people know this, but Sarge was raised on a boat. I went to boat school and boating academy, and he didn't touch land until he was 17 years old.
I didn't go to boating academy.
Let me do your intro. Didn't touch land until he was 17 years old. He still shakes every once in a while when he feels the sea beckoning to him.
That part's true.
So anytime there's a movie about the sea, we'll all get an email from Sarge being like, they've misrepresented
the sea.
And there's a movie coming out several months from now that does this, that Sarge emailed all of us to say, is this worth me staying up all night to write an article? And we're like, no, none of us have heard of this movie or the book it's based on or the sea. We're all so you can't write the article. And I'm giving you the opportunity now to vent your frustrations about.
So In the Heart of the Sea comes out in December. Mm-hmm. It's being advertised, if you watch the trailers, it's Chris Hemsworth battles a demon whale. And the movie is...
Perfect, sounds like.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah.
Every shot of the trailer is a whale attacking a ship. And
Scarlett Johansson played the demon
whaling whale. Yes. It's a whole bunch of her, like, holding on and then shaking like a... You know, how, like, a school of fish forms in Finding Nemo. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Just like that, but with Scarlett Johansson.
How do you feel about the accuracy of Finding Nemo?
It's really good. Yeah. I'm totally on board with... Especially their portrayal of seagulls and giving... lobsters Boston accents. What I was talking about, Chris Hemsworth battles a whale. It looks like the dumbest fucking thing I have ever seen.
Is your issue that it should have been Liam Hemsworth cast as the Chris Hemsworth role?
Yes, because he's the hotter one. But also, it's just, it looks like a really dumb movie. Yeah. You know, because no one wants to root against a whale.
Yeah, the poster for the movie is an enormous, beautiful whale tail that is like perfectly lit by the sun. It takes up 80% of this poster, and then a bunch of like useless bobbing human heads looking at the whale. I'm already on the whale side. Like,
yeah,
fuck those
yeah.
humans.
Because those humans are, you know, responsible for... we've pretty much extincted them.
The They're whale extincted. Tail is almost doing a Christ pose in this, because it's just like outstretched like that and lit by the sun gloriously. And this movie and book is about Chris Hemsworth murdering this whale.
Yeah. Whale okay. murder. The book it's based on, actually...
And this is, just so this makes sense, the book is based on a true story.
The book is built entirely from the first-hand accounts of the survivors of okay. the sinking of the Essex sailing ship. Nathaniel Philbrook wrote it. It's one of the coolest books I've ever read in my life. The whale is in the book for, I think, a page and a half, if I remember.
Whoa.
Because the entire story is about first them leaving and just immediately having problems with their ship. And then this whale shows up and does something that a sperm whale has never, ever done before, which is attack the ship, and the ship sinks. That's a page and a half. The rest of it is them surviving in the boats. Because the way whaling worked back then is you had your big ship, and you would get inside your little boats, and you'd row out or sail out. And
Sorry, this all sounds so technical to me. We didn't all go to boating academy.
Yes, I can't dumb it down anymore, Daniel. They go out after the boats, they throw their pointy sticks at the whale, kill the whale, bring it back to the big ship.
I believe those are called harpoons.
Pointy stick. is a technical term. Their biggie boat sinks and they're stuck in the little teeny boats, and they're there for 95 days. Eventually they go crazy. They're, you know, they start eating each other, and by the time they're rescued, there's only a few of them left, and they're so insane that a few of them don't even realize they've been rescued. They have bones in their beards from their friends' bones in their beards, and they won't take the bones out, and they sure. won't give up their friends' bones, and they're like still gnawing on them for days. Within 3 months, they all have
it's
jobs
no longer
on...
a friend once you've eaten
yeah.
it.
Yeah. yeah.
Well.
But if you're clutching those bones, it's not because this was Tony and I
no,
loved him.
It's because you're
I'm insane now.
Well, there's more to that. Within 3 months of getting back, and maybe not 3 months, very shortly after getting back, all the survivors are working on whaling ships again and going out. In the meantime, Chris Hemsworth's character ends up marrying the widow of one of the people.
He ate?
Yes.
Ah!
Which,
no!
I was reading this last night. Actually, I'm not sure if he ends up eating Matthew Joy. Matthew Joy may end up just being buried at sea. He may have died before they ate him.
Okay.
Either way, I think he ate him. It's funnier yeah. if he ate him.
It would, and that would give him all of Matthew Joy's courage then, because that's how courage transference
yes.
works. You eat them, and then, like, now you're as brave and, like, you
Yeah, it's
are
like a Mario
enough.
Brothers whaling
yeah,
movie.
Absolutely.
But I was reading that last night, and I had the same reaction, like, oh my god, you married the dude you ate's widow. That's the most terrifying thing I've ever heard. But then I realized, like, immediately after that, he's like, okay, I'm going back to work on a sailing ship. I'll be gone for 2 years.
I hope it happened again.
Live in my house while I'm gone. Bye. So that's sort of like doing a favor
yeah.
to your friend's widow. Like, sure, you can live in my house, and I don't know.
I don't know
that's
if that's
still
how
creepy.
I see it.
The 19th century
it's
was not a
lining
great
I wouldn't
time to be a lady.
To this.
It's crazy because that's the true story that should be a movie. I would watch that as
right.
a movie. It was entertaining just you talking to me about it, but instead it looks like someone read this book, some older suit version of Josh Sargent read this book and was like, this would make a great movie, the page and a half that I've read. I'll get to the rest. This movie about whale fighting sounds great. I can't wait to make it. That's,
I
what,
don't know.
That's how
I...
studio suits sound.
Great.
Make it happen.
Wait,
and then
I will make it.
Did a bunch of cocaine and stumbled out of the room, and then a movie started happening.
Yeah,
yeah, I don't know. I hope the movie... Because the thing is, if the movie ends up being what the trailer is advertising, it's basically like making a version of Into the Wild that's about Chris McCandless battling like a Yeti.
Yeah.
That sounds like a way better movie.
And if the movie is what the book is like, everyone who goes to see it expecting a kaiju whale mm-hmm. is just going to be horrified when Cillian Murphy gets eaten. So
Cillian Murphy.
Cillian Murphy, really?
True story.
Oh.
Yeah.
I get every name wrong.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons we've fired you. I'm sorry, this is how you find out. Didn't you get fired on the last podcast you did also?
I've been fired on every podcast I've done.
You still have the sea.
Yeah. Can't get fired by the sea. Do you know in what year Heart of the Sea is set?
1820, I believe the ship sank.
So Chris Hemsworth marrying his friend's widow, that's sort of similar to like the birth of the swingers movement. Have you heard about this? Do you know? This is a tangent to what we're talking about.
This is going really well.
This new thing, the swingers movement?
Yeah. No, this new swingers pitch that I want to show you guys.
Oh, okay.
Start snapping really coolly like the Sharks and the Jets.
Brett, dim the lights.
We're doing this on the podcast?
Yeah.
We're swinging?
Yeah.
We're just going to start swinging?
No, but swinging, cracked roving maniac Robert Evans told me about this, that the swinging movement has roots in either the Air Force, the military, somewhere swinging was encouraged because it was soldiers or airmen saying, look, I might not make this, so you
go
will take care of my wife.
Like,
I
want to
make sure that, 100%. You will take care of my wife when I die. And then once wars stopped, they were like, you know what? I still really liked occasionally fucking everyone else's wives. So let's just keep that going as like a thing without any of the nobility.
Yeah, that was kind of what I landed on. Why? Because like it sounds creepy even defending this guy marrying his dead buddy's wife.
Well, here's another way to look at it. Maybe there was a rule that if you eat a man, you must marry his wife.
Yeah.
And that would make it okay.
Because from the wife's perspective, not only did her husband die, he didn't even like bring back any whales because their ship sank.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, husband's dead. Also, no paycheck. And I don't think they had severance back then.
Probably not.
I don't think they were.
The whaling economy didn't seem like a very stable one to me because whales kept destroying all those boats. It sounds like
it was a constant thing.
I want to know what the actual guy looked like, because I'm sure he didn't look like Chris Hemsworth.
Oh no, he looked badass.
I'm sure.
Look him up.
Oh really?
Yeah, he has like this, I mean, just his Wikipedia picture, he's got like
this killer
beard.
Elderly.
Oh yeah,
he's that's we don't even make faces like that anymore.
We would never.
Eating your buddies ages you hard. That's he's 29 there.
It's an easy sell when it's Chris Hemsworth, when your dog shit husband goes off to whale and doesn't come back, but then Thor is like, look, I'm sorry your husband died. Do you want to trade up, though? You can have me in my house.
Can someone make me a Wikipedia page and enter my occupation as whaling captain?
Someone in this room? Do you want? All right, Brett.
Like immediately?
Are we making a Wikipedia page right now? Yeah, it is true. The wife went from Scarecrow from Batman Begins to Thor. I feel like a quote out of context, withholding the rest, so I can be free
what you want to see. We're going to get right back into the podcast in a minute. This is me, Dan, again. But first, here's Ben Folds 5's Best Imitation of Myself, a song about a guy who isn't sure how much of his real self he should present to his audience because he's not sure if the truth is more entertaining than him trying to be what he thinks they want. It's a dope song and seemed appropriate. So there, now you have that. Crack Podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.com. Your season-long fantasy football team may be going strong. Mine is not. But you don't have to wait until week 16 to get paid. Put your fantasy skills to the test every week this season at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site. One-week fantasy means no season-long commitments. Got an injured player? No problem. It's like a new season every week, so you're never stuck with the same players. Do you hear that, Dez Bryant? And get this, DraftKings is crowning a new millionaire every week this season. You could turn your love of football into a life-changing payday. Just pick your players, pile up the points, and pick your cash. That's it. Believe me, you've never experienced football like this before. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and use promo code CRACKED to play for free for a shot at $1 million in this week's Millionaire Maker event. Enter CRACKED for free entry now, only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. Hey, that's DraftKings.com. Hey, shaving can be a pain, right? It can be uncomfortable, cause razor burns, nicks. On top of that, it's outrageously expensive. But not at Harry's. Harry's is about half the price of the other big branded blades, and they ship for free to your front doorstep. You never have to go or talk to anyone or see anyone at all. It's perfect. They're better, too. The first blades were made in Germany, and they liked them so much, Harry's just bought the entire factory there. Why pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades? That's insane. It's half the price at Harry's, and with Harry's, you'll get a better shave that respects your skin, face, legs, and your wallet. No more poor quality blades. And no pesky plexiglass cabinets to unlock either. The starter set is an amazing deal. For $15, you get a razor, moisturizing shave cream, and 3 razor blades. And with promo code CRACKED, you can get $5 off that for an amazing deal. Men, women, very advanced children, we all need razors that shave well and don't suck. The best part about razors is the shaving. The worst part about it is leaving my apartment and going anywhere and dealing with anyone to get them. This fixes that problem. So go to harrys.com now and Harry's will give you $5 off if you type in my coupon code CRACKED with your first purchase. That's harrys.com and enter coupon code CRACKED at checkout for $5 off and start shaving better today. All right, what are the movies that we want to talk about that are based on a true story that are bullshit? Sarge and I both want to talk about Frost Nixon.
Start. You're the president guy.
I went to that movie because I liked everyone involved in that movie, and I was really excited about it. But I sort of knew going into it that it was wrong. And they don't get too crazy, but there's a very specific moment. If you've seen the movie or if you've seen the trailers, you know that there's this really chilling moment where Frank Langella's Nixon says, "I'm saying when the president does something, it's not illegal." And he says it like very matter-of-factly, like puts his hand down, and there's
Nixon.
Like, thank you. Like the air goes out of the room and Frost is like, "I'm sorry?" And like, it happens in the movie too. It's such a moment that like, oh my God, what the fuck did he just say? And it really plays like this, it's probably the most important part of this film when it happens in the movie. It plays like this huge event, this huge moment. And you know going into it, if you're me, that it's wrong because you can watch those interviews. They're all available on YouTube, and I've watched them before this movie was even a thing because I was like a party animal. Mm-hmm. And that moment, how it actually plays, is one of the most casual things. It's like Nixon, because Nixon, there is a good moment where Nixon, his apology is great, but the moment that is momentified in that movie is Nixon in real life going, brushing him off, like, who gives a shit kind of way. Nixon is saying, "Nah, I'm saying when the president, it's not illegal if the president does it." Like, he does it casually and kind of dumb and in a way that you can't really get mad at him or see him being insane. It's this really low-key moment that the movie just...
Also, that was his legal defense, wasn't it? Wasn't that, like,
yes.
Literally what he said in a court
"I'm the
law
president!"
And, yeah, like,
another solid Nixon.
Yeah.
What did you have to say about Frost Nixon? The same thing?
Similar. I was surprised to learn, because I didn't know that this interview had happened when this movie was announced, and like when I went to saw it, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Why hadn't I ever heard of this before? I looked it up, and the reason I'd never heard of it before is because it didn't matter. Like,
yeah.
When it happened on TV, everyone who covered it was like, well, that was dumb,
mm-hmm.
because clearly, he said Nixon's apology really works.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure you know, he scripted it out.
It's a scripted apology. Yeah,
he wrote like, oh, I'm going to use this opportunity to get an apology out there and get people to like me again.
Yeah.
And
because everyone's making so much money off this fucking interview.
Yeah, he was paid $600,000 to do it and then got 30% of the profits from airing it. It was just like, it's just so weird that we took this moment and decided to go back and be like, how great was the liberal media at this point?
Yeah, like this great gotcha journalist, Frost, who trapped him into admitting his guilt. No, because he spent the entire interview saying what he did wasn't wrong and not like showing any semblance that he understood why it was or could be wrong, and then ended with this very canned apology that's well written, but it's not like, I'm sorry that I broke all those laws. It's like, I let my friends down, and I let the American people down, and I let these people down, and for that, I'm very, very rich. Whatever.
This seems like a particularly insane thing to completely lie about, because, like, the interviewer is out there. Like, we can see. It's not like accounts have been, like,
people
confusing.
Are still alive.
Yeah.
Right. Like, remember.
Like,
it makes me wonder how these movies even happen. That, like, how did... Who adapted that? Ron Howard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ron Howard is also did Heart of the, In the Heart of the Sea. Also did, I think we could
Beautiful
talk
mind.
About
yeah,
every single Ron every single movie he's done we could talk about in this podcast except Apollo 13, as far as I know.
Yeah, I don't know how he, like, because he would have to have read the raw story at some point that Nixon made lots of money and scripted this interview and there were no big moments and it didn't actually matter to anyone, and he thought, wow, what a great story. Because it's not, like, I don't know how he saw that and thought, wouldn't this be better if I
wonder if
lied?
You get to the point where it's just like he's so far along in the movie and then he finds out that it's all bullshit. He's
well, based on a play.
I've spent like 4 hours working on this. So.
He probably just read the play.
Yeah, I saw the play and was like, this
I know
great.
A thing or two about Ron Howard.
Yeah, but who wrote the play? Like, that's so.
It's a good playwright, right? Who did that?
Peter Morgan.
Peter Morgan? Yeah, he's.
Oh, sure, Peter Morgan.
Yeah, he's great.
I wonder. he's the Quentin Tarantino of whatever a person who writes plays is called.
Yeah, let's let's move right from books to plays now to get back somewhere.
I wonder if when I'm like in 20 years, we're all going to be going to see a movie called Kelly Trump about the 2015 Republican debates, and it's just like it's just this dramatic low lit moment, and Megyn Kelly is like, why do you talk about women the way you do? And then Donald Trump just explodes on camera.
I can't wait to see Shia LaBeouf's Donald Trump in 25 years. Just really makes
I would say Ron Weasley would be.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, whatever that kid's name is.
Yeah. What is that kid's name?
Ron Weasley.
Great.
Rupert Grint.
Yeah. Oh God, it's such a good name.
I got it.
How did I forget it? Sounds like Donald Trump also.
Yeah. You ever, like when you have something on the tip of your brain and like you can either let it go or you can like force it? I just forced it, and I probably blew a
you
blood
did.
Vessel.
That's
also
really
the sound effect you'd make forcing anything.
Yeah. Rupert Grint. Shut that right out. We have, are you guys familiar with Rocky, the Rocky movie?
Yeah, heard of it.
The movie Rocky?
Have heard of it.
So we wrote about this on the site, and I knew going into it that the guy on which Rocky is based was really mad about the film because he thought, hey, Sylvester Stallone, you stole my life, and I'm not getting any kind of profits. That's the only thing that I knew about it as being untoward or inaccurate, but I'm reading on this Cracked article that the real Rocky fought a wrestling bear and went to jail on drug charges. Is this news to anyone?
No, because I've read the article.
Yeah, exactly, because I read
but
this very article
it's
last night.
Dope.
It's so insane because there's a...
But the bear is blind, which seems...
progressive? I don't know. What are you going to say about that?
Affirmative action got that
it's
bear.
Not, yeah, this is not an... It's blind bear. That's not an awesome fight anymore. That's just really sad, and I don't want to know more about how this happened.
Well, just because the Rocky franchise did go off the rails. Like, there's... Paulie has a robot friend in one of the Rockies. America pretends that this didn't happen.
Right.
But it did. Paulie is like, there's my robot. And the robot's like, Paulie, I love you. Or whatever. It's been a while since I've seen the movie.
It's interesting that
I don't believe you. That's a scene in a Rocky
movie. No, there is a robot that like hangs out with Paulie in his house. And
you could show me the scene and I would still be like, no, Daniel, you're full of shit. Stop doing this.
It's interesting that this wrestling bear story is actually closer to the adaptation that is The Heart of the Sea.
Oh, yeah.
That's
than actually either of these movies.
This Chuck Wepner, if he's alive, could be just as mad at Ron Howard for ripping off his life for Heart of the Sea as he was Sylvester Stallone for ripping off
or
his life
Chris
for
Hemsworth
Rocky.
Or Chris Hemsworth could have fought a bear.
Yeah. Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. Sorry, I didn't explain that well. But I'm glad that you went with me on the...
I just thought it was silly that Rocky, like, ends the Cold War, and there's robot friends, and there's an extended sequence in one of the Rockies where he's, like, selling deodorant. Like, he's shooting a bunch of commercials about deodorant that makes him smell manly, or cologne, whatever it is.
Sure.
They let all that in, but they were like, oh, no, this true story about him boxing a blind bear. That's too ridiculous. We're not going to include that. We're not going to taint the Rocky franchise.
Yeah, it's like the wrong kind of ridiculous.
I want to bring it up now since we've talked about this so much about if anyone knows, just like blind speculation, why Hollywood keeps doing this. What is the incentive for taking perfectly serviceable true stories and making them worse? They're not condensing characters. It's not like, oh, he had two brothers, but for story efficiency's sake, we're going to make one. Like, he had two brothers, one of them was a wizard, we're going to cut the wizard because...
I mean, do you think it gets to a point where there are, like, network notes that are just like, I don't like this aspect of the story, or studio notes, and then you're cutting out real things?
That's probably true. It starts with writers
right,
and directors that
want
to do things.
Somehow there's something
like,
related to the
truth. I don't know, I just don't believe that he'd box a bear.
Yeah.
It's like, if you just look at this
what
one
about
photo,
a robot?
I want to show you.
Yeah. It's like, on camera. It's happening right over there. He's boxing another one.
It's literally happening right now.
Straight.
I don't know, my nephew said robots, so put a robot in it.
Well, yeah, it's like I just, for an upcoming article, I spoke to the former Marine and teacher Luann Johnson, who was the Michelle Pfeiffer's character in the movie Dangerous Minds.
So cool.
About making that movie and just her kind of baffling experience in what they were cutting out and what they added.
Did she not really sit backwards on the chair?
She never, I didn't ask her that.
How else would she
jacket. I asked about the leather jacket. She said she never wore a leather jacket because that wouldn't have impressed them. They would have been like, why are you wearing a costume. Just dress like a person. Like, it's fine. We know that you're not a we're not going to freak. We're not going to think that you're a teenager. Right. We're not going to be like, oh, wow, she's 17. She knows where we come from.
Right. You can't, like, never been kiss plot someone, but also still pass as their teacher.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't do both of those jobs.
Her interactions with the writers and the directors were so fascinating to me because there's a scene in the movie where a student, and the first day, a student sexually harasses her, and Michelle Pfeiffer, playing her, cries and runs out of the room. And when she either heard about that scene being written or saw it in the movie, she said, I'm a Marine Corps officer.
That happens to me every day.
Yeah, she's like, a 17-year-old boy is not going to make me cry. And what she said to me, which is my favorite thing, is she said, I would have cold cocked him. He would have not seen it coming and he would have gone down. I would have been fired.
Which is the much better movie. Yeah.
She's like, that would have been the end of my career forever.
Which is a much better 7-minute movie.
Is it a much better movie? It's like, I went to this school with these kids who are like, they really need some tough love, and I just beat the shit out of them. And like, it turns out that's the way to get through to them. That's a terrible message. We can't
just beat children.
Get rid of that movie.
There was another scene. She found out at one point, they were like, oh, we need to write in a scene where you have an affair with one of your students. And she's like, don't do that. That didn't happen. Also, don't do it. Like, you lunatics. And like, as she like left the set. The movies, if anyone who hasn't seen it, Dangerous Minds, extremely racist. Mm-hmm. And she commented on that. Like, so in case you guys don't know, here in Hollywood, all black kids aren't drug dealers. And all Mexican kids aren't all Latino kids aren't criminals, also not all Mexican.
Yeah, it's the movie that's racist, Sarge.
Also me, just incredibly. And they said, their response was that, well, our on-set gangologist...
Wait, this is not a joke?
Yeah, no, let's really let's strip Time Bandit right out of your title and swap in gangologist.
That's fine. Yeah, scribble it out and write it on in Sharpie, which is how Time Bandit's written. Her reaction to that, which I thought was fantastic, is she said her first thought was, oh good, some kid got off the street and marketed his skills to some Hollywood executives and is now guiding this ridiculous movie being made about me.
It's really insane that she was like, hey, this movie's about my life and I wrote it and it's me and I'm still alive and present and I'm in a room with you that has air in it, so sound will travel. And they're like, yeah, we need to get an expert on this subject that's not you to come in here. Like, that's an insane thing. That like, why hire an additional person? If you have any questions, ask this non-leather jacket clad Michelle Pfeiffer stand-in. She can probably tell you how it went down.
And by the way, you don't need to read the article when it comes out, because I'm telling you.
No, I've googled gangologist instead.
Yeah, what about ganthropologist? That's what I would have gone
with. Ooh, ganthropologist is better. She said...
Brett, make a note.
She said, talking to the writer at one point, she described, I forget exactly what scene, but the writer says, okay, we're going to have you do this. And she said, I never did that. What I did was this. And she had this like long, complicated story. And the writer goes, oh, wow, that's so much better than what I'm, that's what I just wrote. And she's like, it's in the book.
Yeah.
I wrote the book that this is based on. It's in there, what I just said verbatim. And he's like, she tells me that he said, oh, I don't have time to read your book.
No!
I got to write
that's
your movie.
That's actually a joke. Really?
That's what she said
to
me.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. How does she feel about all this? I'm going to take a stab. Poorly. Negatively.
She said she used to be like really upset, but now she really likes the song Gangster's Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Thought that was really cool. And she thinks that like, hey,
man,
maybe people got...
Those are the kinds of things that I say when I watch like a nephew's shitty play. The sets! Oh my god! Who designed these programs?
No, actually, my favorite part is that a big part of the movie is her. She gets the kids interested in poetry by saying, you know, Bob Dylan lyrics.
False, because no kid has ever been interested in poetry.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that'd have been a total square if someone was super interested.
Sorry, it was the thing you just wrote down in your notebook, a poem.
It's a visual joke. It's not going to translate. I was timidly hiding my notebook like it was full of poetry. Yeah. That was the gag. Cut all this out, Brett. Cut out my flop joke. She got them interested in poetry by being like, you know, Bob Dylan lyrics are poems.
Right, in the movie.
These kids are like, we've never heard of Bob Dylan.
Not in the
movie. No, in the movie, they're like, Mr. Tambourine Man's about drugs. And she's like, I finally connected with them with drugs.
Yeah, she has a Dylan contest where they have to find a Bob Dylan song that's like a Dylan Thomas song, which of course is going to engage every 17-year-old kid in South Central Los Angeles. In real life, she used rap lyrics. She started with rap lyrics because clearly you would
Are
do
you
that.
Are you kidding? Sure. Which are like so much more poetic and better.
Yeah. And I love Roger Ebert's review. He points out that in real life, she connected to inner city culture by embracing it, the movie had to sell this culture to white people.
Right.
So they were like, yeah. Oh yeah, they love Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
All these teenagers.
The only reason they listen to rap is because a white person hasn't showed them Bob Dylan yet. Yeah.
You just need to send Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah. Just go to your local, the street, and play some Tambourine Man.
Oh man.
What a bummer.
Yeah.
She got to be portrayed by Michelle Pfeiffer, though.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. Yeah.
It would be like,
and
that's me.
Come on, Gangster's Paradise is a fantastic song.
It's a solid song.
It is a good song. Yeah.
Did you guys see the movie Pursuit of Happiness? This is sort of, we've talked about movies that like, oh, they changed this true thing and they made it worse. The true thing was a better story. Why didn't they
stick
to the truth?
The true thing is that happiness is not spelled like that.
Right, the truth is happiness. Yeah, yeah, happiness is not spelled like that. Also, happiness is an illusion. God is the construct of man. Death is the reward. Good night, everybody. But no, the Pursuit of Happiness is just Will Smith and Jaden Smith wandering around the planet being like the sweetest, happiest father and son duo, and Will Smith solves a Rubik's Cube and gets to attend this special course and sells...
He gets a job even though he shows up in an interview without a shirt?
Yeah, sells medical equipment, and then everything turns out all right for them, and like he's got this crazy, seemingly strung out wife, Handy Newton, I think, and he's just him and his kid against the world, and they're homeless sometimes, they're sleeping on the street. And in the end, everything works out for everybody. Pursuit of Happiness, da-da-da-da-da. The real version of
Jada
Will Smith's
Pinkett
character...
Jada Smith should have played his strung-out wife. He should have just gone...
Just gone full family.
His whole family in there.
I think Dan Castellaneta could have been recast with baby Willow Smith as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
They're up for the same roles often anyway. But in real life...
Dan Castellaneta whips his hair back. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
In real life, the guy on which the movie is based, the first 4 months of his program, had no idea where his son was. Was completely like fucking
hidden
off
under
and
that
doing
adorable
his own
afro.
Thing. Yeah, his son was actually with the mother, and in the movie, Will Smith character gets arrested for parking tickets, and he can't make his class or something. In real life, he was arrested for domestic abuse against the mother of his child, and these are the things where I don't understand how someone reads the initial story.
Right, and says so this
and
is an
like,
inspirational movie.
I should tell everyone a much better version of this.
Was she really strung out? Was she really a junkie, or was she?
I don't know. I mean, not that it means he should beat her if she.
No,
was.
I just wondering.
It is the official stance of at least two people on this podcast, three if we count Brett, that you shouldn't beat. Your wife, even if she's addicted to drugs.
I mean, just to play devil's advocate.
Nope.
No, I was wondering if that was like, that's like another aspect of this. He, in real life, he just beat the shit out of her as a horrible human being and then made a movie where he's like, oh yeah, then she was a junkie. And then she's sitting in the theater watching the movie. Being like, what?
And in fairness, Chris did eventually get his life turned around. Like, he became a broker. He did the things. He did get happiness, and they made a movie about him, and he's in the movie, and
which
and
is just giving you free reign to go beat another wife.
Right, right. That's I think what Will Smith was trying to say with his work. That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Oh, we're all sad now.
Yeah. There's got to be a different thing we could end on that's not a bummer.
Try Bob Dylan lyrics.
Was Wolf of Wall Street accurate? It Wolf blows me Street. Away that the guy shows up at the end of Wolf of Wall Street in a cameo, and he's like, "Here I am." This horrible
Wolf of Wall Street is completely accurate, and it's such a bummer because that guy Jordan Belfort clearly hasn't learned a lesson. There are articles about him now because he like charges so much money to go around to colleges and functions and talk to people who will listen to him, but he doesn't want to apologize.
I hope all the questions are, can you get me Quaaludes?
Yeah, they're all like, hey, we saw this thing that like you found the last Quaaludes ever. Come on. We're all buddies here. But no, he still goes around and he's still just a huge asshole. When people ask him about it, he's like, look, I went to jail. Didn't you see the movie? Didn't you see the arc that Hansel and Leonardo DiCaprio went through? That's the same as my arc. And like all of his interviews dovetail into, look, I don't need to fucking be here. You guys aren't even paying me enough. Normally I charge this much money and you guys are only paying me this much money. I'm the Wolf of fucking Wall Street. Ow, ow, ow. Next question.
An awful human being.
Yeah, it's really bad. The book is completely insufferable. I really thought I would like the movie more because it had a bunch of good-looking actors that I like to watch and listen to.
It's good to look at those people.
Because reading the book is just, I can't stand the way this guy talks and thinks and is. And is there justice? Skip ahead.
No.
Nope, no justice. Not at all. We'll still make so much more money than me forever.
Coda, no justice. Yeah.
Surprising.
If we could end on, can't get off these bummer notes.
No, it's
happiness really is an illusion. That's if we've learned one thing today.
There's no such thing as justice. We've hit that a few times.
Yeah.
I don't know, Liana. How's your book doing? It's doing well. Is it good?
It's doing pretty well. It's been a really exciting. It's been really cool to have a thing. It's been the best part has been my ability to actually be like, I did something.
Yeah.
Like in my life for the first time ever. I was like, I have done a thing. In the pursuit of happiness.
Great. Yeah. I want to take the story of you doing a thing and turn it into a movie.
Where I fight a whale?
Notes. I have a few notes.
Can I fight a dolphin?
I think it's...
you need to have an affair with one of your students.
Dolphin. I really think you'd be better as Chris Hemsworth, if I'm being
totally honest. We're agreed.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, guys. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for helping me out while I'm filling in for Jack. He has a lot of family land that he recently lost, and he can only get it back by a ski competition. Is Jack good at skiing? Great question. He is not. He's been training diligently for like 6 days with an older, hitherto concealed family member that we thought was gone. So we wish him the best of luck. This is a huge, huge opportunity. If he doesn't get that land, I think there's some oil at stake as well, and it will fall into the wrong hands, and we're just everyone, fingers crossed, for the Jacker, as he demands to be called. Before we go, Liana, where can everyone find this great book of yours?
First of all, I find it offensive that you haven't noted that I've just been sitting here doing a Rubik's Cube this whole time.
Oh my God, let's hire her for a job.
She's done like 18. There's just a stack of Rubik's Cubes. At the center of the table.
My book, you can get, the easiest place is on Amazon. It is called South on Highland, and it's not that long. Amazon, that's how you have to say it. I've inhaled some helium while doing the Rubik's Cubes. Yeah, it's not super long, so if you don't really like reading.
And it's great. Lots of great people have said wonderful things about it.
That's very lovely.
Yeah.
People have been nice about it.
Sarge, do you have any books to your name?
No, thanks.
Any Rubik's Cubes?
You both have books? That's fine.
I don't have any books coming out. I'm just sort of
Written 11.
You're just coasting on on your last one.
All right.
I'll write a book.
Yeah, good.
And it will be adapted into an accurate movie.
Yeah, it'll just be completely ruined.
And I'll have
ruined.
An affair with one of my students.
All right, sounds great.
That's why
great.
You do it. You write the book for the affair with the student, if I've learned anything.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
I've been working on my rewrite, that's right. I'm gonna change the ending. Gonna throw away my title and toss it in the trash.
Hey, it's here. We're at Footnotes. That awesome song you're hearing is Paul Simon's The Rewrite, chosen because, I mean, if you listen to this whole podcast and don't understand why a song called The Rewrite, featuring the lyric, gonna change the ending, is appropriate to the subject matter, then, I mean, you're a liar. You clearly haven't listened to the podcast. This song is off So Beautiful, So What, and it's a fine album for the whole family. We covered a lot of ground today regarding our complicated relationships with truth in our entertainment. I don't know if we've changed the world enough with this podcast to convince Hollywood to stop making up shit and calling it the truth, so I suppose I'll just steer into the skid in a can't beat 'em, join 'em sort of way. To that end, if I ever die and Hollywood decides to make a movie about me, please lie in the make me cooler and more interesting direction and not the have an affair with my student sort of way. That's Josh's weird thing. That's Josh Sargent. That's what he wants. I turn him into the authorities, but, you know, everything he does takes place in the legal gray area that is the mighty sea, to which my jurisdiction does not extend. Jack will still be out next week as he is still caught up in a Trading Places-esque body-swapping shenanigan, so you'll get me again. See you next week, or rather, speak at you. I will speak at you next week.
I'm working on a rewrite, that's right. I'm gonna change the ending. Gonna throw away my title and toss it in the trash. Every minute after midnight, all the time I'm spending is just for working on a rewrite, that's right. And I'm gonna turn it into cash. I'll eliminate the pages where the father has a breakdown and he has to leave the family, but he really meant no harm. I'm gonna substitute a car chase and a race across the rooftops when the father saves the children and he holds them in his arms. And I say, help me, help me, help me, help me. Thank you, I had no idea that you were there. When I said, help me, help me, help me, help me, whoa, thank you for listening to my prayer. Working on my rewrite.
Cracked Podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.com. 1 week fantasy football at DraftKings means every moment could take you closer to a life-changing payday. Play when you want and pick a new team every time. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and use promo code CRACKED to play for free for a shot at $1 million in this week's Millionaire Maker event. Enter CRACKED for free entry now only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio, boom.com. The wolf dead.